Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me are a couple of MFF OGs, two people who have been around since essentially the beginning. It's Megan Hoffmeyer.
And Ghost Hoffmeyer.
Our cat's sitting right next to us. And John Levingood.
What's up?
This is the original crew right here, the three of us.
Yeah, goes back to like 2014. No, but the pod. Was it pod 2014?
2015. The beginning of 2015.
Okay, 2015.
And then MFF, we started it in 2010. You came on in 2011. Then we did the pod in 2015.
It's coming along.
We're those, you know, back in the day on MFF, I used to bring up Kurt Russell every time we talked about a podcast. How many episodes did I do that for, John?
We must have gone like 60 or 70 or 80 straight pods where you mentioned Kurt Russell.
In the beginning, with an interesting way.
Yeah, and like there were a couple times where you didn't. It's like it was almost noteworthy when I reflected when you didn't mention him by chance.
You know what's kind of funny is a lot of times when people ask me how I'm doing, I tell them, you know, living the dream. And when people ask me how's it going and I say can't complain, they get really thrown off and they look kind of unhappy. Like
because you did something different?
Yeah, I mess with their routine. And I do that on purpose.
You use both of them equally, but I mean, I have the pleasure of going to like Publix with you where you say that to cashiers and stuff all the time.
Yeah, Megan hears it about 7,000 times a day. I love it when you go inside a Walgreens and the person's like, hey, how's it going? I'm like, living the dream. Then I go in the back and I get a Gatorade. Then I come back to the checkout. They're like, how's it going? I'm like, still living the dream.
Still living the dream.
Not much as well, you know, back there I had an epiphany.
It's funny because you do get a wide array of responses. Some people smile, some people are like, yeah, man, that's great, and then some people are like, well, I'm not living the dream, and they get real cynical about it.
More like living the nightmare.
I don't know where I picked this up, if it was from a movie or what, but my default answer is surviving. and so like I'll say that like at a Publix, but I'm a pretty chipper person, and I'm I think I'm pretty congenial with the people I encounter at stores and stuff, and like, oh, hey, how are you doing today? Did you find everything all right? Oh, yeah, I found everything fine. Oh, are you doing okay? That's surviving. And they're like, yeah, me too. Like everyone, like when people are at work, they seem to really relate to the term surviving. But when I'm in a bar and someone says, oh, how are you doing? I'm surviving. They're like, oh, God. Like they're like, oh, I wish you were doing better almost. Like they don't say it that way. But at work, people are like, yeah, I get you. And out of work, people are like, man, that's rough.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do you need a double, sir, or maybe a friend?
Yeah. You have a flight in front of you and you're like, oh, surviving.
Right. Yeah. It's like, yeah, these IPAs just aren't, you know, hitting it. Yeah. They tried. They tried. It's their first attempt at a double.
Whenever I meet people too, whenever I say living the dream, they're like, I say that. Like everybody who says living the dream thinks they're the only person who says living the dream. It's an interesting thing. We're all kind of, we don't like each other.
They're living in a dream if they think they're the only ones who say living the dream.
Yeah, they're living in a dream. They're in an inception state. They're in the Dracula dead and loving it dream where he's eating fried chicken.
Like when someone incepted them, they incepted them with the idea that they were the only person who said this.
Yeah, and then they get really thrown off.
So speaking of incepting things, did your fantasy football team name, Kurt Russell inspired, come before all of your mentions on the podcast or after?
After.
Inception.
Yeah, I'm living in a weird... I'm Tom Hardy wearing a cardigan. Wait,
so Mark, do you give a different Kurt Russell inspired name for your fantasy team every year, or is your fantasy team every year Kurt Russell's beard?
All right, so I've been in one league for 10 years, and my team there is Team Dance Party, and I have a picture of Richie Tenenbaum looking sad, and then this one's just been Kurt Russell's beard, so it's just been pretty much that.
That league, you're set though, because they make banners and stuff.
Yeah, so I'm set in the league. I can't change my name.
They have trophies.
But I've been Team Dance Party because I just think it's funny. And you know,
I just imagined you 6'4", you doing Gangnam Style.
Something would pop in the first 3 minutes. So this is exciting, John, and it's good to have you here. It's good to have Megan here because we are doing the Random Awards, which we have been doing since 2011.
Yeah, there's probably been, by the way, like, you know, what, 10 posts, 10 like articles, and maybe like 5 or 6, or maybe this is the 7th podcast on random awards over the years.
Yeah, because I think we've done mid-year random awards and we've done end of year random awards. So yeah, this is easily the 5th or 6th random award. You should listen to all of them. They're great. And so actually, before we get into that, we have one listener question, which we are really excited to answer. And it's from Logan from, you said, Ohio, John?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Ohio. Random question for the podcast. That's how we love it. Any idea why the Coen brothers went with Netflix versus a traditional studio for The Ballad of Buster Scruggs? More creative freedom? Maybe their target audience is more likely to watch it online than in theaters? Was Netflix the backer from the start, or did they pick it up in post-production?
Pick me.
Okay,
actually,
Megan.
I found the answer while we were chatting. So their finance company, their production company, went straight to Netflix because they said it would have never been funded otherwise.
Yeah, so even before I heard this question, you know, we like to research and get the answer. But just thinking to my, after watching Buster Scruggs, I just thought no theater would have ever played this movie because it's very violent. It's incredibly dark. It's bleakly funny. I mean, there's murder to the highest. It's just not a main. It's beautiful to look at. It's creative, but it's also 2+ hours. It's my favorite 2018 movie, but it's not. Theater people in the theaters would not have liked it.
No, so,
now I haven't seen this movie, by the way. Is this like Hateful Eight level?
No,
not
at all. Your own tune. No, okay.
No, I mean,
like absurdist Oregon Trail humor.
Yeah, it's really, it's like Blood Meridian met Infinite Jest with all of its different setups and vignettes with very bloody outcomes.
Could predict the end of each story if you have a twisted enough sense of humor.
Yeah, you could see a lot of them coming. John, this movie, I wrote this the other day. It's 100% on my wavelength.
Like when you're watching the stories, if you think of the weirdest and also darkest possible outcome for the story, that's probably what it's going to be.
So after Logan sent me this question, Logan sent the question, I think he was halfway through watching the movie. And then he sent me an addendum to the question about an hour later, and he said, or perhaps it's because it's an anthology film.
Yeah.
Because anthologies are hard to market. That's fair.
Yeah. They asked, I read an interview with Joel and Ethan Coen, and they asked the brothers if there was discussion about breaking it up into maybe a series. And they said, this is the script that they turned in, and this is what they shot.
That's why I love Netflix. Like, Netflix is good or bad because it lets director. So Mute was that 2018 movie that the guy who made Duncan Jones, who made Moon, made. That came out this year. Not
That's
good.
That's the Paul Rudd movie.
Yeah, the Paul Rudd.
I didn't see that either.
With a good mustache.
Alexander Skarsgård.
The thing about that movie
Justin
is,
Theroux,
it's
just so creepy.
It's not. We watched it and I think I liked it because it was so weird.
I liked Paul Rudd in it.
You're watching it and you're like, man, this movie is on another wavelength. Is it a good movie? No. But is it different? Yes. So this movie, I think, is really great, but it has these crazy anthologies. Some are longer than others. Some are very long and build to something very dark. And I don't know, but every moment of this movie, I was laughing. I just had a smile on my face while people are getting murdered. So, I mean, you know, that I think it wouldn't have worked in theaters. Let's just say that. And, you know, they made Hail Caesar, which is a movie I love, and it didn't do well in theaters.
I love Hail Caesar, though. That one is.
So I just think, you know, like they said, they went immediately to Netflix because they know that, you know, a production company never would have given them $50 million to make it.
I think they did a good job with the first story they show, which is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. And it's just so, the tone is so silly, and but also murdery at the same time, and he's just smiling and singing and killing people, so it sort of puts you on the right foot for what you're going to get for the rest of it.
It's murder. I love it. That's a good question, Logan. Send us more. How did Logan end up sending you this?
Logan has sent us a few, and he and his now wife, Sydney, they're both entomologists. That's how I know them.
Hey.
So, hey, late congratulations, but I've told them in person already for getting married. But they are big horror fans. And so a lot of times when they see me post pictures of what I've been seeing on Facebook, they'll chime in like, oh, should we watch this? Why or why not? Or they'll say, hey, have you seen this, John? You should see this because this, that, or the other. And, you know, they were the ones that got me to watch Hold the Dark.
Oh, yeah.
If you saw that
Jeremy Saulnier
movie, God, what a weird movie that is.
Sounds real lucky.
And Green Room and Blue Ruin. I love that guy's movies.
Yeah, they were all over The Ritual after I told them about The Ritual. However, they were very upset with me because they did not like Cold Skin, and I loved Cold Skin. But I wouldn't even call that a horror movie, if we're being honest.
I mean, you win some, you lose some, right?
Sure, sure. But, you know, they keep sending me messages and keep talking to me at our conferences. So, like, I haven't fouled them too much.
Yeah, just don't be, hey, go watch Martyrs, you know?
I mean, people should watch Martyrs. Is a great film. Is it a good movie, though? See, that's where it's a great film, but it's a movie that will turn a lot of people off.
I think I would ask people what kind of movies they watch. And then once I get a good vibe, then I'd recommend Martyrs. But I'm like, hey, what kind of movies you watch? Well, listen, I love Dwayne Johnson movies.
Right.
I love.
Just go send them to watch War on Everyone.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I went back. You know what's a great movie? Martyrs.
But it's not like sometimes, you know, usually the things that you think are great films are also great movies. But like I just saw Boarding School recently from the recommendation from the Horror Movie Podcast, because I listen to them a lot. Shout out to them, by the way. They're cool guys. But I watched that movie just because of their commentary about it. And I loved that I watched it. It was an excellent horror film. It's really hard to recommend to someone. because again, it's like you can be a great film and not necessarily really be for entertainment value a good movie. I think it's only a good movie for some people. It was a good movie for me. I don't think it's a good movie for most people.
That's like you know Johnny Numb, one of our favorites, Johnny Numb. Was right. Promoting Thirst the other day.
Great movie! Yeah, yeah, the Korean 2009 a vampire film.
A great, beautiful looking film. Megan, you said it looked beautiful. You like the look of it, filmmaking of it.
It's too depressing.
Use your words, though, that's like a gut punch to the soul.
It's so depressing. Movie.
I love that movie, but I don't want to watch it again. I wouldn't recommend it to somebody.
Mark likes depressing. It's just not my thing.
Yeah, I sell the devil Thirst. I love those crazy Korean movies.
Yeah, but you know, there are people out there who just, and I like challenging movies. That's a challenging movie. But you again, don't want to watch it every year. But there are some people who really like search for those emotionally difficult movies, and Thirst. That is that.
After watching it, I wanted to go put dark blankets over every window in my smallest bedroom in my house, start smoking a cigarette, fill up a large glass of blended cheap scotch, and listen to the Joy Division for several hours.
Run out in the sunshine and clear EDM music feel better.
I needed to watch Care Bears three times in a row. The original cartoon movie from the 80s three times in a row to feel better.
Fun. All right, so speaking of bears, I think that leads us into our awards.
What a lead-in.
It is. What do you make of it? It's a great lead-in.
No, I like it. It's great.
Desperately clawing for segues like a bear on a campground, getting into a cooler.
I was on the edge there for a while. I didn't know how to. after this podcast, we're going to have to go outside to the great outdoors.
Oh, great movie.
And be brave.
1987, Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, I'm just naming a bunch of bear movies. The Revenant.
Nick Cage in a bear suit.
Yeah, this is.
Oh yeah.
And read the article on Movies, Films, and Flicks where I trace how far he ran. All right, so
and I made the graphic.
Since this is random awards, and since I made the segue, and since this is random, I should be the first one to do it, but we're not. So let's open it up with you, John.
All right, I'm gonna go with this has not been I've said this 2 years in a row. This has not been a very heavy new movie watching year for me, but the ones that I saw, there were some shockers, and I'm gonna say for the best use of a severed head in a film award, can anyone guess?
Yes, Hereditary.
Yep, Hereditary. However brief, I mean momentary, it is moments that you see this severed head on screen, that aunt and shrouded, decapitated preteen child's head was so shocking and just emotionally holy crap.
You know, it reminded me of a scene from Buffy season 3 where a zombie gets his head stuck in a mailbox. I don't know why I went there watching it, but when I saw that thing, it just kind of went, and then the kid drove home.
It's funny you mention that, because all the last several months on social media, because you started with the bear segue, there's been the videos being shared of the bear that had that thing stuck on its head and people trying to save it.
Yeah.
But really, no. So this severed head scene, of all like the head trauma that I've seen, movies like Drive with the head stomps, Brawl and Cell Brawl 6.
Oh,
Brawl and Cell Block 99 with all the head stomps. Like, all that is so shocking. But this is a different shocking. It's less about the gore and more about the image. And this image really, like, you see it for a second and a half. And it was as close to traumatizing as I can feel.
I guess I didn't see that move. I did not see that coming. That's for sure.
That was just – and they even reflect on it later in the movie, and oh, God, like every time I just kind of – I shuddered. That was a powerful film. There's a little bit of hate for the end of that movie, the way that it kind of went bonkers left field with all the supernatural just in the last 5 minutes. But overall, regardless of how I felt about that ending, that was such a well-acted, powerful movie. And then, again, it has that image that just sticks with you, like the face of the first killed victim in The Ring. You know, there are these images that will stick with you for decades, and if it's the one thing you remember about that movie, that's it. And there are all these other movies that we see that we were so entertained by that we really can't summon anything to our recollection if we haven't seen it for 10 years.
You know what's weird about Hereditary is I really enjoyed sitting in the theater. I was one of maybe four people in the theater watching it. I enjoyed watching it, but I don't know why, but I knew exactly where it was going every minute. And then when I left the theater, I forgot about it. I mean, I remember I said, whoa, because I was like, whoa, that was a ride. But I just kind of forgot about it. But I feel like I'm the outsider in this whole thing. Because it's on almost every list in the top three of horror movies this year.
I don't know if this is the reason for you that you reacted this way, but like for me, you know, we all have our own experiences with family and things. The family tension was so visceral, but at the same time, for me, it was so incredibly familiar.
Got it.
Like, it was only shocking that this was being shown in a film, but it wasn't shocking to me that this stuff was happening at a dinner table. Because I feel like I've lived this several times just without the literal death of a sibling. But, you know, it's like – so I think that maybe if some of us have lived a little closer to these emotional outbursts, these violent family outbursts in family, that as shocking as it is to see it on screen, maybe that's not what's going to traumatize our recollection of it, you know? Like a severed head would.
Reminds me of the last time you were here for dinner. That got really uncomfortable. We were all just yelling at each other.
You shut up. I was probably just basking in the awesomeness of everything that Megan prepared. And you're an ace on the grill. Normally it's just Megan preparing the food.
Yeah, I was getting rained on. All right,
was
Megan.
That the time that you had the umbrella while you were grilling?
Yes, it was. We were doing the sausages.
That's right. Hey, you gotta.
Best grilling while holding an umbrella award.
Oh yeah, 2018 for sure. All right, Megan, what's your first award?
Okay, my first random award for this year is the best slow motion chase while holding coffee in a cathedral award.
Wait.
Yes.
I don't even know what movie this is.
It's from Paddington 2.
Oh, so I didn't see that. Okay, slow motion holding coffee in a cathedral.
It is
Chase. He's
hilarious.
Chasing a suspect, and he's going around the top of the dome, and he's a security guard. It was Simon Farnaby, one of the creators, playing a cop.
And so he's recollecting, like, or telling the story, and he's like, so I jumped into super speed, but then you see him kind of jogging with a cup of coffee really slowly. And the best thing is he was in the first one, so he's been duped twice in both movies because he's one of the co-writers.
And he was attracted to a what's his name? Hugh Bonneville dressed in drag.
In drag, and then he was attracted to
in both movies.
And Hugh Grant in a nun's outfit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but it's just
like a very attractive nun.
We just love the actor, and so he's like, then I jumped into hyperspeed. But then
he says it all in a very kind of blasé way.
But it's just him walking very slowly with a cup of coffee. I love it. It's perfect. It's Simon Farnaby. He's also in Mindhorn, which is on Netflix. You should watch it. But yeah, he wrote these movies. They're both like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's just great coffee running.
So I haven't seen Paddington. I expect that eventually I'll see it with my nieces. I also haven't seen Peter Rabbit. I assume you guys saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's crazy.
How would you rank Peter Rabbit versus the Paddington
movies? Oh, they're totally different.
The Paddington movies are, I mean, Paddington just so good.
Is, you know, Tom York of Radiohead was just watching, like, he was just tweeting GIFs of Paddington from, like, it's 100%. Peter Rabbit is like a pop culture.
It's fun. It's a little dark.
See, the trailer looks more engaging to me for Peter Rabbit with Rose Byrne and Domhnall Gleeson and everything. Whereas Paddington, to me, right, just looks a little more for the children than for the adults and the children, just from what I saw in the trailer.
Oh, no,
just
give it a watch. Of intrigue, you know, Paddington always gets into some sort of trouble here and there, but he's adorable, so he ends up trying to get his way out of it. I would say that Paddington 2 had the look and kind of style of a Wes Anderson movie, but the way more heart.
I mean, yeah, more accessible than it is now.
And I love the voice, though, from the trailer for Paddington. The voice is excellent.
Good. And it's not really stuffy. I thought maybe it was stuffy, but it's just so heartfelt.
Stuffy,
and,
like a bear.
Yeah, oh, goodness. And Peter Rabbit, though, it's just all pop culture and Daisy Ridley falling on her head and losing teeth. And I'm worried about Rose Byrne's character in that movie because she is not all there.
No.
She is not. She's not. I don't know what to say about it, but it's fun.
She doesn't think very critically.
Yeah, there we go.
She's not very aware.
All right.
Wait, so she's like John Arbuckle and Garfield. Like, he's talking to his cat, but he's not really responding appropriately.
Yeah. She is.
Yeah, she's talking to bunnies.
Yeah, it's. No, wait, Donald can hear them, but
yeah,
she
but
can't.
She talks
oh, yeah,
them.
You're right. All right, so my award is the best or the sexiest pizza award. So this is going to get us our R rating, and I'm going to pull a curveball on you guys.
Well,
so
now hungry and aroused, though, that's with right. the sexy pizza.
Sexiest pizza.
So in the movie Set It Up, the very joyous, fantastic romantic comedy, there's a scene where Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell are hammered, they're drunk. And they have this pizza, and Glenn Powell's like, I wanna fuck this pizza. And so that's the best pizza scene, but the sexiest pizza belongs to the really weird little movie called Little Italy, starring Hayden Christensen and Emma Roberts.
What?
It's like a.
Oh my God.
It's about this two families who.
It's like a Hallmark Christmas movie, but it's in Little Italy, somewhere in Canada.
Yeah, and so they're in, like, Toronto area, and their families used to win all these competitions for pizza, but then they spread out. One of them has really good sauce.
Well, they were part of one pizza place.
Yeah, and then they got into a fight. And one of them has great sauce, one of them has great dough, and so it drives the family apart. Emma Stone's this really great chef in England, or not Emma Stone, Emma Roberts. She comes back home to change her visa so she can go get a baller job in London. She comes home, and Hayden Christensen's, like, the town stud, just riding around. Every woman loves him. And the two of them, you know, of course they fall in love, but there's a pizza making scene where they make this delicious looking flatbread pizza.
Like figs on
yeah.
It
I mean, it's a sexy cheese. Pizza. So, I mean, the other pizza they wanted to have sex with, but this is the pizza that's the sexiest in Little Italy. And plus we get to watch Danny Aiello drink a ton of lattes. So that's always something great. Latte Aiello. But yeah, it's a sexy pizza. If I ate that pizza, I would have done a happy pizza face.
That is a way sexier pizza entry than the award winner from 1985 in Spaceballs when it was Pizza the Hut.
Yeah, much, much sexier. That's like, yeah, I mean.
But I mean, when you have a pizza licking its own lips, I mean, you have to give it the award.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as an entity, I would say he was the sexiest.
He was the sexiest pizza.
As a midnight drunken food, that one pizza was the sexiest. And then as a culinary piece of art, the Little Italy pizza was the sexiest.
They should have had a scene from, like, Ghost where they're tossing dough together. Like,
oh,
they
yeah!
Play.
Kneading dough together?
Yeah, and, like,
Hayden Christensen, Emma Roberts.
I mean, it's a feat to make pizza sexy, because if you eat enough pizza and you're really full, you don't feel sexy.
Yeah. Hey, how you feeling? Not sexy.
Full.
Yeah. All right, John.
I think that not this year, but last year when I visited, you guys made like barbecue chicken pizza.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
When it's I was still, there.
But it's so good that I don't eat that much because we save it for leftovers and then like put it in the freezer. So it's so good I don't like to eat that much of it because I can spread it out as opposed to just eating so much pizza that you just lay on the ground.
That's usually what I do. that's my approach.
This wrong. All right, what's your second award?
My second award is the best dance gif inspired by a movie award.
Ooh.
Anyone guess?
Hold the Dark. Alexander Skarsgård.
This would double as really the best dancing scene, but I didn't want to call it that because the dancing scene is actually only about 2 seconds in the movie. However, after we did our podcast and reviews on the movie, whenever we were posting on social media, Johnny Numb kept saying, okay, I retweeted it.
The babysitter.
Yeah, the babysitter. When they're dancing back to back in slow motion with that, like, with all that pink filter lighting and everything. Like, what a fun movie. And this doubles also for the babysitter as the best babysitter movie award of 2018. Good God. I think this might actually be a 2017 festival film release, but it got Netflix in 2018. And I loved this movie. Oh my God, so much. We podcasted about it about 6 months ago. What a feel good film.
Yeah, it's just, and I think, like we said, it's interesting when a movie comes out. So Ballad of Buster Scruggs did this, but this movie, you know what its vibe is almost immediately. And I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically, it's like, take what everyone loves about that coming of age thing that was captured so great in Stranger Things season one. But now let's transmute that into a much more generally upbeat, 12-year-old vibe. But yeah, it's like that. It just stuck out to me so much. And you know what it reminds me of also, even though it wasn't a feel-good movie, was remember House of the Devil, that long dance scene in 2009 when the babysitter's...
Oh, yeah.
All right, so it's funny that these totally dissimilar films make me think of each other, but these happy, like, they haunt your memory, these dance scenes. And when two movies do that, dance scenes really are powerful, right? You think of movies mm-hmm. like Stayin' Alive. You think of movies like, wait, why can't I, Everybody Wants Some. The dance scene and Everyone Wants Some was so personalized to that movie. It wasn't just a dance scene in a movie.
And guess what they were dancing to? Fog Hat.
I thought that's maybe excellent. He was gonna go with Stellan Skarsgård and
Colin Firth
reenacting Titanic to Dancing Queen.
Yeah, they're on a boat just dancing, the two of them, looking like they're having the time of their lives. Holy crap. I didn't do that on purpose.
Well, I didn't see that movie, so
pure joy, John.
I've seen neither of the Mamma Mias.
Don't watch the first one. Watch the second one. The first one is
well, they tell you the whole story again in the second one. Tell you it all.
The first one is directed like a stage play, but a movie. So the exaggerations and the movements, and it's just the second one is perfect. Watch
I
the second one.
I like the first one though.
I do, but
it's just the second one is next level.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you don't need to watch the first one because they explain everything in the second one.
Okay, that's interesting. You see, I would have never watched part two before part one without hearing this.
You need to watch part two. It'll change your life.
Hey, podcast listeners, you are welcome to that little gem.
Make us associate producers. What's your second one, Meg?
All right, my second one is Best Magical Creature Riding a Champagne Cork Award.
What? Was that Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald?
Yeah, the Niffler. As Newt opens the door to his basement, there's just this random shot of a baby Niffler flying. It pops the cork on a champagne bottle and it flies through the door into the stairwell.
Oh, the Nifflers were the best part of that movie.
Slow motion is this little magical creature just on a champagne cork. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen either of those movies either.
The second one's not good. But
the world is fun.
Yeah,
to watch.
The world's cool and. We love the Fantastic Beasts. There's some
story
really,
doesn't really move.
There's some really cool little monsters. in it. The Niffler, he's this little guy that can just shove tons of stuff into
his little pouch,
and he steals everything. And so he goes into this place, and they're like, "Hey, watch your silver," because the little Niffler will steal them. And so this little Niffler plays a pivotal role at the end. There's a cute little Niffler, Google Niffler.
There are three babies. Yeah. I think one of them was swinging on a lamp chain.
And the Niffler gets hurt and he's limping. But just, well, yeah, I mean, I love things on champagne corks.
Wait, you showed the second one, though? Not nearly as good as the first one?
Yeah, the story doesn't really move. But it's just fun to live in one of the JK worlds, because she kind of, you know, she fleshes it out so well.
The world's cool, but there's no, it could have been a third of a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I actually just bought recently the first one on 4K, just because I love the Harry Potter movies so much. So I still haven't watched it, but so are there enjoyable Nifflers in the first movie as well?
Yeah, you're going to love the Niffler. He's trying to hunt down the Niffler, and the Niffler's stealing a bunch of gold.
Robbing a jewelry store.
I love that little guy. All right, so I'm going to go off of what you said with the decapitation, and I'm going to go as best finger removal by best taking off of a finger by the person who lost the finger. And that award is going to The Night Comes for Us.
Oh, right.
And it's the operator, a.k.a. Hammer Girl from Raid 2. She engages in this epic... So it's the best action film of 2018, aside from Mission Impossible Fallout. And she engages in this epic brawl where she fights a woman who loses fingers. But she gets her finger cut. And she just looks at her pinky.
Snaps it off.
And just rips it off.
Oh. She doesn't even react. She just has this gangster look on her face.
She just pulls it off of her hand. Ugh. And it's just the most awesome fight. And you're just this. So The Night Comes for Us is an action film directed by a horror director. And just watching her rip off her finger. It was just gangster, though. It was awesome.
It took me back to The Shape of Water, which won this award last year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he ripped off his... Wait, we do a lot of finger losing, don't we?
For a second, I thought you were going to go down the path of The Apostle, where that machine that, like, crunches and grinds off his fingers and makes me kind of puke.
Yeah, he lost his fingers, too.
And I just watched The Hills Have Eyes remake, where our protagonist, his hand is on the ground, and someone swings an axe and takes off two of his fingers.
I mean, I should write a post about best finger losing.
You've done hand and limb.
Yep, I should do fingers.
You gotta go on to the fingers.
I mean, just look, that was so awesome, though. You know what I love in this movie that you think is gonna be filled with all this testosterone? And I mean, I love Iko Uwe, and then the other guy, Joe Taslim. I mean, they're amazing. But then you introduce these badass females who are just kicking the crap out of people. I love that fight scene. I thought it was brilliant the way they set that up. And then she rips off her finger. So I had to give that movie props because it's amazing.
And they said that if they did more movies in the wider world, it might focus on there's some French group of female assassins. And those women are part of that.
Ooh. French assassins in Indonesia?
But I actually have to back it up and see Headshot still.
Yeah, I need to watch that movie, too.
Because that's that same director, isn't it? And also with Iko Uwe?
I got to watch that movie. It's just the thing is, I want to be able to sit down and invest everything I have into it. And sometimes you get so busy, you can't. That's just a movie I want to absorb.
I know that's how I handle almost every foreign language movie. Like, I need to start watching it at 2 p.m. on a Sunday because I might keep stopping it. Because you can't go get a soda out of the fridge when one of these when an intense action movie is on, or when a foreign language movie is on. You combine it, like, you just need to be immersed catch it all.
That's why I have such a hard time watching Blue Planet, because you're just I need to see everything.
Those are the best. Blue Planet, Planet Earth.
Oh, man, but I just want to sit down and absorb, like, fall into that world. Hey, how about this? Let's take a break, and let's go watch all of those right now. John, drive up here. And then when we come back, we'll finish the rest of our random awards. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And that was amazing, John, but it took us 3 years to watch all those shows because we had to give it all of our attention. We kept having to go to work and do other things.
There's like 20 hours between the Blue Planets and the Planet Earths.
I mean, we were busy. And thanks for driving up, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, no, I enjoyed that homemade pizza.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I mean, what would you say it was sexy?
Oh, it was sexy. Wait, I don't want to sound too sultry if your wife made it, so.
All right, no, it was from Mellow Mushroom.
Yeah, Mellow Mushroom, got it. All right, so let's jump back into these awards. John, what you got?
Okay, most baffling WTF ending award for a film.
Can I guess?
You can guess.
Apostle?
No. That was a baffling WTF ending, though.
Mandy?
No, we mentioned it already. Hold the Dark.
Hold the Dark.
Hold the Dark. That movie, if so, I don't want to describe this movie, because if someone hasn't seen it, I want them to go see it. But this movie, for an hour, is very straightforward. But then, like, the middle 30 minutes, you're like, what the hell is going on? This has turned into a weird mystery movie. And then the next 30 minutes, it just turns into, like, this 18-layer deep, like, triple-crossing crime mystery with the most weird psychological motives. And even after seeing it and then thinking about it in hindsight, like, I can't figure quite out what happened at the end of that movie.
You know what I love about it is I saw the ending and I went, cool. And then I didn't want to, like, think about it, though. You know what's weird is some movies I really want to dive into, and I don't know if you had this, but as soon as the movie ended, I was like, I'll take it at face value. It was weird for me. I didn't want to pursue it further. Is that how you had it, or no?
Well, but for a different reason. So this movie ended, and I felt like, you know that feeling where you kind of nod off for just a second and you snap out of it and you realize that you didn't miss anything, yeah, right? Well, at the end of this movie, I was like, I must have nodded off for longer than I realized, because I clearly missed a big chunk of this movie. And then I thought about it, I'm like, wait a minute, I never nodded off at all.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I needed to rewatch it, but because I realized that I was paying close attention the whole time, I'm like, I don't know how satisfied I'll be if I rewatch this and try to get more out of it. I think I just need to talk about it over beers.
Yeah. I guess it could be podcast worthy just to kind of explore. Well, but see, I don't know. For me, it's weird. I guess you're right. I just have to sit with your buddies and chat about it, because I haven't talked to anybody about watching that movie.
Just over a beer, right? Yeah. Not Google. We're not looking up what the writer thought or what the writer was in, because then you start to get closer to what you feel like is a right answer, but that's not necessarily fair, because this is art. You're reacting to what is presented. It doesn't matter what the filmmaker thought, right?
Yeah.
If it's not on the screen. So if you didn't get, so it's like, you know, it gets, that's why it's like, it's, this is just a casual chat over beer without the internet kind of thing. Like a podcast chat without the internet. But I think you're only going to find disappointment if you start digging.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess that's what I had. I just went, this movie washed over me.
But God,
I'm
done. Cool.
And I'm cool.
But the some of the things that happen, like, you just sit there with your mouth open and you're not blinking. Like, wait, what? And then something else happens. You're like, there's more weird shit? Like, just...
What I like about Jeremy Saulnier's movies is the violence. You feel it. When someone gets shot or stabbed or gutted or cut or loses a finger or gets their hand almost sliced off, you feel it. You know what I mean? That's what this movie does.
It was an interesting movie.
All right, Meg, what do you got?
Ooh, okay, I have to pick. The most convincing horror performance that gives me real life anxiety about leaving my house award.
Ooh. Mandy? Is it Mandy?
I did not see that, so no.
I know what it is.
Mark knows what it is.
It's Unsane.
Yes, it is Unsane.
Oh, I haven't seen Unsane.
Oh, it's so good. Filmed on a... Oh, Meg, you go. I'm not jumping on your stuff.
Claire Foy in a Steven Soderbergh movie, filmed on an iPhone. The angles are kind of weird. You get used to it after a while, but it's just a little bit disturbing because you're watching sort of this movie, but it was more filmed in less cinematic way, I guess. The tones are very brown and yellow. I don't know. I'm not usually into horror movies. Horror movies aren't my genre, but this one felt scary to me because it felt like it could happen to you.
Yeah, it's a stress bomb. We just sat there watching it. And I probably sat up sitting, when I started the movie, I was sitting up straight in the couch. And as the movie went on, I'd say less than 12% of me was on the couch. Like, the rest of me was, like, on the floor, because I kept... You know when you get uncomfortable and you kind of hunker down? I just hunkered down so much because, I mean, and also, it just gets you. And
because there's a lot of real life... she's caught in an insurance scam.
Yeah.
Maybe. But is she crazy? But did she ever have a stalker? So what's going on? These are all things that kind of feel real. They're the kind of things that might happen in your life and you go, am I nuts?
And I said that on a podcast with Megan. I said that Claire Foy was kind of like a wombat in it, but she's more like a honey badger.
Like a wombat?
Yeah. And then we went on to like, what is a wombat? And then we heard that wombats can be pretty tough. But Claire Foy, I was so used to her in The Crown, where she's very regal and reserved and poised. And this one, she's unhinged. She's jumping on people. She's all over the place. She's yelling. And I love that side of her. I thought it was, it's in my top 10 of the year for horror. It's just an absolute stress bomb of a movie. I love it.
And this is like a heavy psych thriller kind of movie, or?
I mean, it's not a heavy psych heavy, I don't think. Psychological elements leave pretty quickly.
It's more like you're just questioning what's real about her world, but is it trying to toy with you? I don't know.
No. Does this maybe skirt on the approach of Gothica with the what's real and what's not? Or?
No, there's nothing mystical going on here.
I need to see this.
It's always straight. I don't want to wreck anything for you, though. It's always straightforward, though. It really is.
She's just got other people around who are questioning her sanity and her motives for their own reasons, that it's kind of driving her paranoia and her problem.
How high would you recommend this? Because I've heard this recommended, but it's like, should I be trying to see this soon?
8.6.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I liked it, and it's a horror movie.
It's worth it. It's really worth watching. I want to write a review for it. I just didn't know how to write it, so I didn't write it.
And Juno Temple's in there being weird like usual, yeah. So that's always fun.
Mark, that's how I felt about Hold the Dark.
Yeah. I was like, how do I write this? Because I don't want to give anything away.
If I wrote a review for Hold the Dark without giving anything away, it would feel like The Gray, but without the wolves actively killing people.
Just like the somber tones and the gray filmmaking. Because it would just be me using a lot of big words. And saying nothing about the movie because I don't want to wreck the experience. Yeah. All right, so here we go. My next one is, goodness. The Best Southern Gentleman Carrying a Building Award.
Carrying a Building?
Yep. Yeah. And this is Walty Goggins playing Sonny Birch in Ant-Man and the Wasp. And so there's a line in the movie
Well, they've used the quantum technology to shrink a building into the size of like a carry-on duffel.
And so he's running around with this building, Sonny Birch is, and Ant-Man comes up, and Ant-Man's like, has anyone seen a Southern gentleman carrying a building? And I just started laughing because he was referring to Walty Goggins, who was running around with a building. And then he got on a ferry, and then Ant-Man caught Walty Goggins and got the building back. But it's just... aside from Iron Man and maybe Doctor Strange, I think the Ant-Man movies are my favorite MCU films just because they're so quotable with Michael Peña, back it up. And then Ant-Man and the Wasp where he's talking about truth serum and the Baba Yaga. I mean, it's just so funny. And I never thought in a serious MCU movie after Thanos snapped his fingers that we would hear Paul Rudd say, has anyone seen a Southern gentleman carrying a building?
Or who's the who's the FBI agent? He's so funny.
Oh, Michael, Randall Park is in it.
Oh my gosh.
Just hilarious.
Did you want to go see it? Did you want to go out after this?
Have you watched it, John?
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's interesting too, because I wasn't a big fan of the first Ant-Man as a Marvel movie, but I was a big fan of it just as a movie. You know what I mean? Cause it didn't feel like a Marvel movie to me. It just felt like a great movie, whereas the second one I feel like started to feel more like a comic book movie to me.
And the line in there where she's like, I used to play hide and seek and I'd hid in the same place everywhere every time, and Paul Rudd's like, I don't think you understood the principles of hide and seek. Just it's a smart ass funny movie, and I could care less about the action. I like,
well, he's like an adult fight. Spider-Man when it comes to his sense of humor.
Yeah, you're right. And I just, has anyone seen a Southern gentleman carrying a building with Walty Goggins running around with sockless loafers? I mean, you can't, it doesn't get any better than that.
It's very cash.
All right, John, what's on next?
Best use of a Cenobite that was not, in fact, a Cenobite in a movie award.
Oh, I know where this is at.
Well, Mark, you take it.
No, Mandy.
Of course it's Mandy. That movie. Oh, my God. So you were raving about Mandy, and some of the internet was going nuts about Mandy. I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going to watch. Normally, I wait a year until everything's out to watch it at least. But I'm like, okay, let's watch Mandy. And I watched Mandy, man. My eyes were just like open and my jaw was just like frozen. And I'm just like watching what is happening in front of my eyes. All this weird Nick Cage stuff, all these colors, all this trancy fever dream hallucinogenic stuff. And then all of a sudden, the Cenobite chain gang shows up on motorcycles.
And they have their, well, I guess we're jumping ahead, but they have the grossest house in the history of the world, John.
They do. Well, and the first one that he kills with the spikes on the head, right? The most Cenobite-y of the Cenobite chain gang. He's like sitting in a dirty condo, like he's a South Philly drug dealer.
Yeah.
he's doing cocaine off of his crappy coffee table when Nick comes in to fight him to the death.
And then Nick does a massive rip of cocaine.
Oh my God. So, like what a ridiculous movie, but it worked so well.
I got very lucky with Mandy because I just ran, like, I think Megan was out of town or had a late meeting, and I just looked on Fandango, and I'm like, Mandy's playing at the theater next to me. So I went and watched in a pretty packed theater. And just the audience, as soon as the Cheddar Goblin scene happened, which that was going to be one of my awards, but I won't do it now. Type in Cheddar Goblin. Everyone started laughing. And then the movie just came a rip roaring, the chainsaw fight, the Cenobites, the line of coke. I mean, just that movie, everyone just started, like, the audience went nuts for it, man. That was so awesome.
It was also the best chainsaw versus a much larger chainsaw fight in a movie this year as well.
Everyone started laughing, too, when that happened. Like, it's just, oh, what a rip-roaring, visceral, sensory blasting experience. And those Cenobites were gross.
They were. It was such a weird movie.
Didn't he go to fight one by a fire and the thing was almost immortal?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was awesome. All right, Meg, what's your next award?
Okay. My next award is the best high-tension singing in front of a two-way mirror while a fake priest hides behind a bed award.
Yes. Hey. Oh, is this Apostle?
Mm-mm.
Wait, what is this?
It's Bad Times at the El Royale with...
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Jeff Bridges,
okay,
and Cynthia Enviro.
Yeah. I mean, it's so... There's a scene where... So he's this... I mean, do we want to give it... We'll give it away.
Listen to the podcast on Bad Times at the El Royale.
Yeah, so there's just the scene that... It's an uncut scene where Cynthia is just singing for about three minutes.
Singing live, too.
Singing live for 3 minutes on a beautiful set. Uncut, while Jeff Bridges waits for her to hit notes to whap a floor with like a hammer.
And Dakota Johnson is behind a two-way mirror.
Yeah, with a shotgun.
Yeah, watching her.
It's a badass scene, and it's just one take. I mean, that's one of my favorite movies of the year for sure.
So I haven't seen this, and I saw the trailer, and I'm trying to get a beat on it. Is this more contemporary Hateful Eight, or is this more Hotel Artemis?
Neither.
No.
It's like a... So Drew Goddard is really good at combining genres. So Hotel Artemis was more kind of stylistic. And then what was the first one you said? Hateful Eight?
Yeah.
That was more just super Tarantino. This one's very...
It's not very linear either because there's these different people with their different stories. And as they go through telling the story in a linear fashion, they'll all of a sudden take you out of it and show you something from one of their past.
It's very noir, neo-noir.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's different from Artemis for sure. And it's different from Hateful Eight. It really is its own beast. I think that guy, Drew Goddard, is very good at making like, you know, Cabin in the Woods.
And he was one of the writers for Cabin in the Woods.
It's a horror
right?
movie, yeah. But it's not, it's also a comedy and it's also a comment. So he's very good at making hybrids. I mean, this is like a cult movie. It has a great shirtless monologue from Chris Hemsworth.
Chris Hemsworth's just having a good time.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, I didn't add it. He's the best villain of 2018.
And just as a total sidebar, because I've watched Hell or High Water twice this year, and we had talked about it years ago when it came out, how does this long-haired, facial-haired Jeff Bridges measure up to long-haired, facial-haired Jeff Bridges in Hell or High Water.
Totally different.
He's got a lot more to do in this movie.
I mean, so in that one, he's, you know, the aging sheriff, cop, whatever his role is. In this one, he's an aging criminal who is kind of falling apart, but he has a lot of heart to him. And he's a good, like...
And Jeff, he can throw a punch.
Yeah, he's like a honey badger. We have two honey badgers this year, two wombats. For people who think that sometimes I guess you could think, hey, Jeff Bridges just breathes heavy on screen and acts, but he's two totally different characters in these movies.
Yeah, well, it's not anything like he barely was even there for the second Kingsman movie. It was just kind of, hey, yeah. Look, it's Jeff Bridges. We're super excited. But this one, he's there. He's performing.
This is the best I've seen him in a very long time, probably since maybe True Grit or Crazy.
Really?
Heart.
Better than Hell or High Water?
See,
to me, I love him in that. I think he's outstanding.
You know what's weird for me is when I guess this doesn't make any sense, but I think about Taylor Sheridan's movies, they feel so Taylor Sheridan-y. Like, the people are saying his dialogue and his style, and they're great. I love Hell or High Water. I love Wind River. But for some reason, this movie it's a really fleshed out, different character, and it went in a different direction than I thought it would.
He's complex. He's trying to convince you in the movie to be on his side, while he's trying to convince the characters to be on his side.
Yeah, I don't want to give it away, but
I might watch it tonight. Yeah, I might watch it when we get off the pod.
It's so good. I mean, and Megan and I read so many articles about the making of it.
I thought it was going to be a little bit more fast-paced than it was, but it's still very interesting.
I mean, it's almost 2.5 hours, and when we walked out of the theater, I didn't even notice it was 2.5 hours. I went, that's that was true. 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that's true.
It was great. All right, so we go from a great, written, beautifully filmed movie to the Best Skull-Faced Hurricane Award.
Did you say Skull-Faced Hurricane?
Yep. Yes. And that goes to Hurricane Heist.
Wait, there is a skull... I haven't seen this. There's a skull-faced hurricane?
So, in the beginning of the movie...
Well, it's in the clouds.
The two brothers, their father's killed by a hurricane, and when the hurricane goes over them, it's like the face of a skull, and it kills their dad.
Kind of like, does this open mouth thing, like it's coming at
and
them?
Later on in the movie, during the massive chase at the end, the thing once again takes on the face of a skull. Which
like Skeletor is behind them.
I love hurricanes.
It could be in the guy's imagination, but Maggie Grace is really good in it. I mean, so it's an absolute B-movie with some very, very bad performances, but it's as unpretentious as they come. It is just, it's about a hurricane heist, and it's a movie that features a hurricane heist. It's as advertised.
We've seen it twice now.
Yeah, we watched it twice. Loved every second of it. They drink Blanton's, which is cool. No, Buffalo Trace, which I'm cool with. But,
oh, yeah, it's got Ryan Kwanten from True Blood.
Yeah, and Toby Kebbell from Black Mirror and Ben-Hur and... those Fantastic Four, but it's a movie with zero pretentiousness. And if you can just embrace that it's about a hurricane heist with so it doesn't take place in this world, because the wind in this world is very works only in certain opportunities. So it takes place in Dimension 2,
listen,
like The Happening.
Global warming is doing all kinds of tricky things to our planet.
But it's just like this guy sends these thousands of dollar drones into the sky, never gets them back. I mean, it's just a weird movie, but the hurricane...
Oh, and he has that awesome car.
Yeah, awesome car. But if you just take your brain out and just want to watch a movie with some buds, not Budweiser's, some IPAs with some friends, watch Hurricane Heist, because it has a skull-faced hurricane.
It is so fun. I was worried that it wasn't going to be very good, but Maggie Grace is solid.
She's awesome in it. She's good in Lockout. She's good in this. She's a good character. There's a scene where she's in a gunfight. And she's doing everything correct, and Ryan Kwanten's like, that's how it's done. But he's just sitting in a car saying that. That's how it's done. Yeah, I loved it. All right, John, what's your fourth one, or fifth one?
Fifth, okay, so my final award. This went to True Lies back in 1994. It went to around 2004-ish. It went to Eastern Promises. This year, it goes to... Fallout, and it is for the Best Bathroom Fight Scene Award.
What?
Oh my god, ever since I saw the trailer With those scenes from the bathroom fight, the extended trailer online, I was like, I need to see this movie. I saw Fallout in the theater, and I wished it was like I was reaching with my right hand in the theater for a remote control so I could pause and rewind that fight scene. Then I saw it on the plane recently, just in the last month, and on the plane I kept rewinding some of these scenes. But God, it was the most, how do I put this?
Slobberknocker?
Incredibly brutal.
Yeah. I love that, what's his name? Henry Cavill is being such a turd, too. He's like, I'm right. I didn't do anything wrong. You're the one who got knocked out.
Oh,
of
yeah.
The
Tom Cruise saved him.
He keeps saving him.
And I just love that Cavill, I like the fighting styles, too. Cavill's just a...
Oh, and he messes up because
he's throwing bombs, as you put it. Throwing bombs.
Throwing bombs. Haymakers. He's just like a force of nature. And then the guy there, I don't know who that guy they were fighting was, but he was awesome.
Dude, I got to find everything he's in.
I haven't liked a henchman that much since the Bourne movies, where those, like, you know, the random badass henchmen who fight Bourne.
Yeah. And like the guy who has the pen stabbed into his hand.
Like those dudes. So Bourne's the only person that could beat them. And so I loved how they just had this, they got him in the bathroom and there's three people in there. Then he wakes up. Like, what a beautifully filmed brawl. Oh, my gosh. And then the Raid 2, that was a good bathroom fight, too. But this one was way better.
Yeah,
what were your favorite moments, John?
Oh, there's so many, though. I mean, as much as I like the technical soundness of great fight choreography, which this had, I actually found the almost more comical moments transcending even that. Cable knocks him out with the computer, but then the computer doesn't work properly. The guy's waking up, right? When Cable at the end of the fight is coming back out, when Rebecca Ferguson has saved him and he's got his hands up and it's very sincere. It's like, whoa, whoa. Like it's those more humanizing moments that punctuate, you know, the beginning, middle, and end of this fight scene. But I only go to those because it's not like there was one great part of this fight scene. This fight scene was damn near perfect. Yeah. So I don't find myself thinking, oh, that one maneuver was so fantastic. Everything here was fantastic. I love that the henchman punched the inside of Henry Cavill's knee and that they didn't make a big deal out of it, which is because it's not a showy maneuver, but it's a very practical one. And so you're only going to catch those things if you are really, really, really into actual combat or fight choreography in movies. God, it was so cool. Henry Cavill just dropping bombs on this guy who probably should have died from that. But whatever. I mean, there were, you know, all these movies, you know, everyone is taking more beating than they should. But when Henry Cavill is hitting a guy that might weigh 50 or 80 pounds less than him with full force haymaking bombs left and right in the ribs, like that guy's internally bleeding to death.
This is in the Mission Impossible universe. These guys got... Right. I don't know what they have in there.
I like that Vanessa Kirby is supposed to be kind of the bad girl, but she ends up working with the government at the end, and she gets out of all of her bad things.
I like how unhinged she was in that movie, just her smiles. She just seemed to love danger. You know what we're talking about, John?
Mm-hmm. But yeah. I like that there were so few consequences for her bad dealings. It's pretty awesome.
All right, Meg, what's your last one?
Oh, this is tough. I don't want to pick one.
Well, we'll do a lightning round when we're done, and we'll just read the rest of them off.
Okay. Well, then, I'll go with best. I'll do one that I think we've all seen, and then I'll do the other movie in the lightning round. Best hallway fight in a secret hotel hospital for assassins award.
Yes!
And that's for Sophia Boutella, who is the room niece.
Yeah, she was awesome in Hotel Artemis. Awesome. Yeah, she's great. And I love that fight scene. It was brutal what she did.
You know, I read that she learned that in just a couple days, but she has a background as a dancer and a Nike model, so the dancing helped her pick up all the fight stuff. She has no fighting background.
I wonder if Statham got help, too, by his diving. I know it's a different movie. Never mind. But I love that brutal fight scene. I thought that was great. I like that the big fight scene didn't come down to Batista. I like that the big fight scene came down to Sophia Boutella. just wiping people out.
Well, then she makes that kind of stand, and she's like, I'm going to lay it all on the line for this guy. Forget this life.
Yeah, she puts down the line, too. Like, don't cross this line. Well, what'd you think about that fight, John?
The fight was pretty good. That whole movie had such an interesting, what's the word, filter over it. Like, it was like a Frank Miller movie without being a Frank Miller movie.
Kind of grungy.
Yeah, yeah. It had such like a live action graphic novel feel to it. Was this based on a graphic novel?
No, I believe the guy just made it up. And the guy who wrote it or directed it was a writer that's done some big movies. So this was like his big step up into making.
I mean, you gotta love a really sassy Jeff Goldblum in anything.
Yeah, sassy Gold.
And you know, is it me or did this feel like, I mean, maybe a slightly junior version, but this felt like it existed in that John Wick kind of world.
Oh, for sure.
I know, but yeah, because with the same 3D printer, you can print livers or guns.
Or bottles of Blanton's.
Or, well, that would be dangerous.
Oh my gosh, I wouldn't leave the house. No, I love that. I like Sophia Boutelle. I love her fight scenes. All right, so I guess I'm up. Oh, goodness, goodness, goodness. All right, so I don't care. I'm going to do that. Best I'm a Busy Guy award.
Oh my gosh.
And that goes to Daniel Wu, his character Lu Ren in the new Tomb Raider movie from 2018.
Oh, I still haven't seen that.
We're not giving anything away. So
we watched it on a plane first and we loved it.
And then we bought it and watched it again and podcasted about it. And
so you told me that people are starting to really like it.
Yeah,
now?
No, all these lists, people are just starting to go, hey guys, Tomb Raider's fun. It's just a yarn. It's a fun adventure yarn with Malty Goggies in it.
Well, it didn't take itself too seriously. Yeah.
It's good. It's really good.
And she was kind of a goober. She wasn't a badass.
I just like this scene where, all right, so there's this moment where she teams up with Daniel Wu, who we all know can just destroy thousands of people. And she's like, I need your help. And he goes into this other room. He's like this drum character. And he goes, I'm a busy guy. but he has nothing to do. And if you watch movies, you hear this line a lot. I'm busy. I'm a busy guy. But I love the way he said it. How did he say it?
I'm a busy guy.
Yeah, he said it very
sassy.
Yeah, he said it very sassy to her.
And like defensive.
And I don't know why we laughed at it, but it's just Daniel Wu. I'm a busy guy.
Well, because didn't he previous to that fall off the top of the boat because he was drunk?
Yeah, he was drunk and he falls off a boat.
After sounds he like saved a busy guy. Her from a yeah. chase.
Yeah, he saved her from a chase. She falls drunk off a boat, and then these kids, these gang members, like he's drunk again. They run away from him. But it's just so funny here because I don't know why the line reading I love so much. He goes, I'm a busy guy. And so that, I don't know, that's why I did it. That's my last one, because I think the new Tomb Raider definitely deserves some more appreciation. I think, I don't know what people were expecting. It's a fun yarn. It's a good movie that you put on.
Yeah,
it has
they
that
were
fun.
Expecting, you know, sexy tank top scenes.
Yeah, and they got cool Vikander, Oscar winner Alicia Vikander.
Oh,
and you watch, I mean, obviously these movies are not set up, the logistics aren't correct, but her fight scenes in these movies, like they really play toward her size, and they really work towards making this movie a lot of fun. And I don't know, the fight scenes were good.
Oh, and we had Walton Goggins again.
Yeah,
so that's always good.
Walty Goggins. And he's also in The Death Cure, Maze Runner. He's Walty Goggins in that one, too.
You're a Walton Goggins.
Well, now, if someone had neither seen Tomb Raider or El Royale, what would be your recommendation out of those two?
You have to be in a very different mood for each movie.
One's a 2.5-hour movie that you have to focus on because of all the beautiful shots and plot twists. And then the other one's just a 90-minute yarn that's fun. I mean, I love Tomb Raider. I have it on Vudu. So, I mean, it's just a fun... I don't know.
I have it on Vudu.
It's Megan's mine. Movie. Yeah, Megan's movie. I got it for her. It's just so good. I don't know. I guess it's just... It's uninvolved. You can enjoy it. It has scenes where you got to solve puzzles and the floor gives way underneath you and... It's just, I don't know. I like Vikander. I think she sells it. It's interesting. I'm an A-list character.
Dominic West looking scraggly.
Dominic West doing his best, like, crazy man performance. Walty Goggins being Walty Goggins. Daniel Wu being a busy guy. Listen to the podcast.
Daniel Wu is the star of the Badlands, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's awesome. All right. So, John, did you have any, we'll do a lightning round. Did you have any extras?
Actually, those, I came up with only my five.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I came up with specifically my five. But a couple of them doubled as other things, like the best movie that only Nick Cage could have starred in, also Mandy.
Yeah. Only. No one else could have done that. Maybe Keanu.
Yeah, But he, I don't know if he does crazy.
Yeah, you're right.
He does crazed, but not crazy.
Yeah, it was only Nicolas Cage.
I just dealt out my five, and I was glad that they didn't get snagged by you guys.
I also threw in the best raccoon fight, and that's from Incredibles 2. Yes. When Jack fights a raccoon, it's beautiful.
That's cute. That's so really funny. Cute.
I did the best screaming bear named Homerton with a bear human skull that screams "Help me." That's from Annihilation. Then I have the best.
Oh, right. Oh my god.
Yeah. I love
that
scene.
That was so creepy.
Yeah. And then I had best usage of a table to kill a guy from the Buster Scruggs.
Oh, that was really good.
I had best beer can Phoenix tattoo from Revenge. the less I tell you, the better. And then best See You Later award goes to, was it Wong from Avengers Infinity War? He's like, I'm going to take off and go protect the Sanctorum. And then he just disappears for the rest of the movie. He's probably just playing video games. he just ducks out and you never see him again. So which one did you have, Meg?
All right, the majority of my lightning round all go to one movie. We just saw Widows, and it was pretty awesome. So, best sitting on a boat while plotting by two Irish actors who are playing Americans, which goes to Colin Farrell and Liam Neeson. Best running while looking like a legitimate runner award does not go to Tom Cruise this year. It goes to Cynthia Enviro.
So, she's a Tony-winning actress. Before one of her performances, she ran a half marathon, an amazing time, and then just did went on stage. And when she runs in this movie, you're like, holy crap.
And she's also the singer in El Royale.
She's the real deal. She's a great actress.
She's a singer. She's a runner. She acts. You know, just no big deal. And also from that movie, best driving with no actors on screen, just a voiceover while establishing economic change in a neighborhood.
It's what? There's a form.
It's fantastic. So, Colin Farrell is a politician, and they're in a lower income neighborhood giving a speech for their political campaign. He gets in the car with his
girlfriend,
wife, whatever she was, gets in their town car to start driving back to his house, and you never see the actors in the car. They just show the windshield, the side mirror, and then what they're driving by the whole time. So they go from this really kind of beaten down neighborhood to his really fancy house, and you watch the progression while you're listening to them talk the whole time about their issues in the campaign and whatnot. And it's a really great establishing shot.
Yeah, for 3-4 minutes you just see the change in a neighborhood. So it's, you hear the dialogue, but you also give this beautiful shot of going from the, you know, inner city to what are they, gentrification. It's I mean, that director is the real deal, Steve McQueen.
Oh yeah, it was a good movie. It was twisty, it was fun, it was, well, I mean, Viola Davis was a badass.
Yeah, she's awesome.
So my final lightning round award, and I won't go through all of it, but it's to be in the spirit of our favorite Netflix movie. I will. Our favorite Netflix movie, To All the Boys I Loved Before. I called this To All the Female Leads I Loved in 2018. You've got Alicia Vikander as Laura Croft in Tomb Raider, Lily James as Donna in Mamma Mia 2, Viola Davis as Veronica in Widows, Lana Condor as Laura Jean in To All the Boys I've Loved Before, Blake Lively as Emily Nelson in A Simple Favor, Claire Foy as Sawyer in Unsane, Jennifer Garner as Riley North in Peppermint. Seriously, don't remember the content of that movie. It wasn't great, but I remember her name. Letitia Wright is Shuri in Black Panther. The girl, what was her first name from Night Comes for Us?
Was that say Julie?
Estelle, the operator. I'm going to go ahead and predict this because we haven't seen The Favorite or Mary Poppins yet, but Olivia Colman and Emily Blunt. And then my random shout out to my two favorite TV badass women this year. Jodie Comer is Villanelle in Killing Eve, and Katie Siegel is Theo in The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, yeah.
All of my favorite female leads from, because as I sat down, I really was going to write an award that was best female lead of 2018, and then I just couldn't pick one because there were all so many awesome women.
Yeah, that's a great list. And you added, Lily James is probably the most likable. She gives the most likable performance in 2018.
Oh, yeah, she was into it, just singing and dancing and jumping around.
It's tough to hire Viola Davis because the actors you put next to her have to be good.
Elizabeth Debicki was awesome.
Oh, yeah, they would just act them off the floor. But, I don't know. That was fun. So, John, what's your favorite movie of 2018 so far? Ooh. I'm putting you on the spot.
Okay, just based on raw reaction and the desire to instantly see it again, Fallout.
Fallout, Megan?
Fallout is by far my favorite Mission Impossible movie ever, by the way.
Yeah, I still love 1. I don't know why. I just love the De Palma direction, but I would put maybe 7. 6? 7?
6?
6? Yeah. 2?
1?
Yeah. Meg?
This is tough. I don't know.
Do you want me to go so you can think?
Night Comes for Us.
Yeah!
I think that's my favorite.
It's that is awesome. Another movie where right when it ended, I wanted to watch it again.
And oh, we've seen it a couple times now.
I got to add the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. It's on my wavelength. But those three movies you just mentioned are, oh my gosh, they're all top 10. I mean, perfect action film, another perfect action film, and then a really weird murderous Western. Sounds good. All right, John, y'all good on rotten or random awards?
I'm just thinking about what I'm gonna watch after we finish.
Oh my god, yeah, no. Do you have any plugs before we head out?
Just a few, always been a strong supporter of our also strong supporters, Billy Crash and Johnny Numb, and Billy Crash you can find at Crash Palace. He hosts the Last Knock podcast with Johnny Numb, which is at Johnny Numb, with no H in that Johnny. And author John F. Leonard on Twitter and Grim Horror, they've very consistently been big supporters of our work. And, Logan and Sydney, they're good personal friends of mine, and they've become good friends of the pod, and we go back and forth. They've given me some great movie suggestions. I've given them some. Even if they didn't like Cold Skin, I won't hold that against them. But they turned me to Hold the Dark. So, thanks to them and for Logan this week for that listener question.
Awesome. Just thank you to everyone for listening. Make sure to head to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. Meg, do you have any plugs?
I would say go to the blog because you're going to put up the full list, right?
Yeah, I'm going to have the random. John, I need you to send me these awards that you came up with and I'll add them into the post. Just send them to me. And then Megan, I'm going to add hers. So our entire list and some different ones are going to be on our 2018 random awards. So just go to Movies, Films, and Flicks to look for that for the complete list and share it. If you like this podcast and you want to share this list, go to Movies, Films, and Flicks and share it with everyone you know. Everybody. I mean, even if you haven't talked to them in years, send this to them.
Put it on your grandmother's Facebook, even if she doesn't know how to use Facebook yet.
Yeah.
Even the people who you're sort of estranged from might have a really awkward. This will break the ice, right?
Hey, check this list out. It's different.
It's super random.
It's random.
Share it with your cat.
Your cat? Something for everybody. All right. So for me and for Megan Hoffmeyer and for John Levengood, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week. Keep it random.